Radio MD.
RadioMD.com.
Become your healthiest self. It's time for Talk Healthy Today. Here's Dr. Jeffrey Burke.
You think that diabetes and pre-diabetes and other blood sugar-related conditions are inevitable? Well, think again. My guest Johnny Bowden is here, and he's going to tell you how diet and exercise can help these conditions, keep them at bay. Plus, he'll give you the skinny on the glycemic index, what it is, how it works, and why it should matter to you. Dr. Bowden will also give you tips on how to slay the sugar dragon that has so many of us in its clutches. Finally, he'll talk about the safe and effective supplements that can support healthy blood sugar levels, whether you're looking to prevent diabetes or help manage an already existing condition. I think that you're going to enjoy his great information and feedback. You know, Johnny, glycemic index, thrown around a lot. I think a lot of people are kind of tie it into high protein, low carb, and you know, but I think the word glycemic kind of throws people off and they think it's only for people with diabetes.
Oh, not at all. The low glycemic diet has been associated in a lot of research with all kinds of really benevolent health outcomes. We're realizing more and more that high glycemic diets are just poison, they're metabolic poison. And it has, yes, of course, it has something to do with diabetes, but it's way beyond diabetes. I mean, this is for normal, healthy, wonderfully fit people. High sugar diets are just, they're just terrible. And one way that we have used in the past to measure the impact of a food on your blood sugar is glycemic index, but there's a lot wrong with that measure. And I've written about this extensively. I've written about it in various books. If you went to Google right now, I venture to say that if you put in Johnny Bowden glycemic index and glycemic load, a couple of my essays on this subject would come up. And I would love to share with you and your audience why I think glycemic index is overrated, but why I think we have to be very conscious of the glycemic impact of foods. It's just not well measured by glycemic index, and I'll be happy to explain that.
That would be great. I'd love that. I think that'll give people a new take on something that probably already is causing misinformation.
Okay, so let's start. I always like to start by clearing out all the jargon. Forget everything you ever heard about the index and the load and glycemic and all these technical terms that just confuse people. Here's the basic thing. You eat food, your blood sugar goes up. Of course it does, because you're eating food and some of it's being converted to glucose, which is just a fancy name for sugar. It's just the way scientists measure sugar in the blood. They call it glucose. That's the technical name for sugar. And glycemic means having to do with glucose or having to do with sugar. So you eat an apple, your blood sugar goes up a little. It's supposed to do that. The way they measure how much it goes up, how fast it goes up, and how long it stays up has been something called the glycemic index. Now, what they basically do is they say, okay, let's see what pure sugar does to this dude's blood system. I give him a dose of pure, unadulterated glucose. And however fast your blood sugar goes up in response to that, however high it goes up, they give that number 100, and then they test every other food against it. So, for example, if glucose is 100 on the glycemic index, what do peanuts do? Oh, give the guy the same amount of peanuts. Oh, it only raises it this much. We give it a very low glycemic index. Now, this is a great concept, but here's the problem with it. How much of the food do you give the person? Well, scientists said, well, we got to give them the same amount of this food if we're going to test them, right? So we're going to pick 50 grams, 50 grams of carbohydrate. We're not going to count the fiber. So it's 50 grams of available carbohydrate. That's a nice uniform dose from which we can compare all these foods. Are you with me? Does this make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It surely does.
There's a problem. We don't eat 50 gram portions. For example, carrots. You take 50 grams of available carbohydrates from carrots, they have a very high glycemic index, which has caused all these low-carb people to say, don't eat carrots, it's got a high glycemic index. Only one problem. You have to eat about a bushel of carrots to get 50 grams of carbs. There's 3 grams of carbs in a carrot. So we need to kind of, and similarly, you look at pasta, you go, 50 grams of pasta. Not really that bad. Somewhere the glycemic index is on 55. It's at a middle ground. Oh, not so bad. Why are they making all this fuss about pasta? Well, because nobody eats 50 grams of pasta. They eat 200 grams of pasta.
Exactly.
That's a typical serving size off the box. If you look at the Ronzoni box, it'll tell you. So you're eating about 200 grams. So what we needed was a measure that takes into account the actual amount of food you eat, not just a random 50 milligrams because we want to keep it uniform. And even though nobody eats 50 milligrams of carrots, nobody eats 50 milligrams of pasta, we're going to just keep that number because it's easy to measure. Well, that makes sense, but it doesn't really have practical impact to people. What has practical impact to people is how much you get eaten of it. And that's where glycemic load comes in. Glycemic load takes the glycemic index, but also takes into account how much of the food you're eating. That's an important measure for people.
Well, because people are different sizes, people have different appetites, people eat different quantities, people overeat, undereat.
And it's not, and 50 grams isn't the normal amount. It's just an arbitrary amount to so that we could measure one thing and compare them equally. But the fact is, a 50 gram portion of pasta, if they served that to you, you'd go, what is this? It would fit in less than a teacup. And a 50 grams of available carbs from carrots, you'd have to be eating like 12 or 13 carrots to get that much.
Well, you know, the other day I saw a friend of mine, and I was just teasing him. He was drinking a 20-ounce carbonated soda.
Yeah.
And I said, are you sharing that with two of your friends? And he goes, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
I said, well, it says on there three servings. And
yeah.
He said, really?
Yeah. Right.
And we laughed about it, but that's it in a nutshell.
Yeah.
Serving sizes, people don't know servings. They don't know the piece of meat the size of a fist. And
I got a great example that people will understand immediately, because every time you bring this up in terms of money and shopping, people immediately get it. The eyes stop glazing over. So, okay, let's say you're going shopping for spices, and they have a per pound of price, right? And you want to know how much you're going to have to pay. You know, what's my budget for spices? Well, let's say that you go and you pick out some imported saffron that is so expensive. It's $300 a pound. You go, oh, my God, $300 a pound. How much saffron do you need for this recipe? A pinch? Mm-hmm. So what you're actually going to pay for this pinch of saffron might be 79 cents. Yeah, $300 a pound. You're not buying a pound of saffron. You're buying a pinch. You're buying, a gram. And that's kind of the same thing with glycemic load. Yeah. The glycemic index tells us the per pound price, but not everybody's eaten a pound of whatever this is. We've got to keep into mind how much you're actually eating if you want to really appreciate the impact on blood sugar, and that's where glycemic load comes in. So generally, I think the take-home thing for people here is we don't want foods that convert to sugar quickly in the body. Now, obviously, glycemic index and glycemic load were meant to measure only single foods eaten alone. If you took some carrot juice, and let's just say it had whatever the glycemic index is, but you put some a Barlean's omega swirl in there, which is a wonderful source of, you know, omega-3 fat, and you put that into the carrot juice, well, guess what? Now you've just slowed the entrance of that carrot juice into your bloodstream, and you've lowered the glycemic impact. So we don't eat foods by themselves. We usually eat them in combination with other foods. We put a little butter on our starches, or we put a little, oil on our, and those things actually have a very profound effect on lowering the glycemic impact. So it's not enough to just look at glycemic impact. We also have to look at how we eat foods in combination. But the general rule is the higher the glycemic impact of a food, the more it's going to affect your blood sugar and the worse it's going to be for metabolism.
So the impact and the load with dealing with glycemic is the thing we should be focusing on. So that makes good sense.
But just don't, everyone who's listening to this, don't let the technical stuff get the best of you. All we're really trying to do is saying, if we could look under a microscope right now when you eat, how fast is your blood sugar rising when you eat this food? If it's going up real fast, that's not a good thing.
Okay. Now, we're throwing a lot of information out there today, but it's good information. So remember, stay up to date on each and every show by liking our Facebook page or follow us on Instagram or Twitter and let us know what your healthy habit is. Then listen in. You might hear it mentioned here on the show. And of course, for more on different kinds of health, whether it's men's health, women's health, or diabetes health and other health and wellness topics, check out my favorite magazine, Better Nutrition, at your local health food store, packed with well-researched articles, recipes, and tips. It's an indispensable source for healthy living. Make sure to pick your copy up today. Now, Johnny, we want to talk a little bit about, of course, the nutritional approach, the alternatives, the complements, the additions.
Mm-hmm.
When we start thinking about nutritional supplementation for blood sugar, mm-hmm. once again, a very big misinformation-filled community of information.
And,
of course, we know that desperation and frustration sometimes lead us to doing and trying things that sound way too good to be true.
Mm-hmm.
How about some basic nutrients that people can bring into their nutritional regime that might just give us support for healthy blood sugar levels?
Well, the one that comes to mind right away for most people is probably chromium picolinate, and that has been found to be insulin's little helper. And we talked on another podcast and to some extent alluded to it today of the role of insulin, the hormone that actually helps wrangle the sugar and take it out of the bloodstream and put it into the cells. But as we talked about earlier, sometimes the cells get resistant to that action. Well, you can think of chromium as kind of insulin's little helper. It sort of makes insulin more effective at doing its job, so you don't need quite so much. Now, taking chromium or taking any of the nutrients that I'm going to mention that could be helpful in moderating blood sugar doesn't work if you're still eating. I mean, it will not overwhelm a high-sugar diet. These are things that can help people if they're already eating in the quote-unquote right way, if they're already moving towards low glycemic eating or low sugar eating or lower carbohydrate consumption. This can and they can't quite, you know, lower their numbers. Chromium might be very helpful for someone like that. But if you're eating your seven meals at McDonald's and you're finishing every meal with a chocolate shake and French, probably not going to do a lot of good. So I really want to be clear about that. Supplements are supplements to an eating plan and a lifestyle that are already moving in the right direction. And once you're doing that, these supplements can really make a difference. So I would start with chromium. I think resveratrol has a lot of promise with this. I've seen some studies showing that resveratrol can be helpful with insulin resistance. We already know that it works on a million other metabolic processes. I would probably include that in a blood sugar modifying program. I'd probably also throw in citrus bergamot. Citrus bergamot is the extract of a lemony kind of fruit that's found in southern Italy. And the extract of this fruit, which, by the way, is the same fruit that's used to make Earl Grey tea, the extract of this fruit seems to have some really interesting metabolic properties. It seems to lower triglycerides. It lowers the worst kind of LDL, the inflammatory LDL-B particles, lowers inflammation, raises HDL cholesterol, and has a great effect on blood sugar. So that's a really nice little supplement, citrus bergamot. You can get that at GNC. You can get it, you know, at all the health food stores. I like the one that's made by Resauvage. Very good citrus bergamot product. Again, we mentioned chromium. I think that one of the things that can be very helpful for people who are either overweight or pre-diabetic or on the road to that or having challenges in this regard with weight and sugar is anything that could be anti-inflammatory. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is, as we've talked about many times on this show, and I know you've talked about the subject many times with other experts as well, inflammation is at the heart of just about every one of these diseases. And obesity is, in a very real sense, an inflammatory disorder, as is diabetes, as is just about any disease you can mention. There's an enormous amount of inflammation. So you want to lower inflammation. It won't necessarily make you lose weight, but it will help mitigate some of the damaging metabolic damage that happens when you have a lot of fat cells putting out a lot of inflammatory cytokines. So what's the most anti-inflammatory molecule on earth? Omega-3s. So I would make, you know, fish oil, flaxseed oil. I love the barley and swirls, as you and I have talked about many times. They're a very easy way to get these wonderful nutrients into our body. They taste great. You can get a really meaningful clinical dosage out of the swirls, much more than you can from a couple of pills. So omega-3s for sure. I like anti-inflammatory things like quercetin, which you can get as a supplement. You can also get in foods like apples and onions. So you really want to think about lowering inflammation as a strategy to help work with lowering blood sugar and lowering the risk of diabetes.
A couple more I want to throw at you. How do you feel about things like bitter melon, mulberry leaf? These are very, very, very prominent now, getting a lot of focus.
And gymnastra. You know, there's a number of these herbs that have been found to have modifying effects on blood sugar. And, you know, they're not as well publicized or well known, but you're absolutely right. Many of these things do have blood sugar modifying properties. A lot of these herbs, bitter melon, gymnastra. You know, there's a couple of others that escape me right now, but there's been a lot. If you delve into the herbal research, you'll find that there's quite a number of these substances can be really helpful as well.
Salicylic, Ayurvedic treatment. used a lot for...
Out of my wheelhouse, I'm not expert on Ayurvedic medicine, and I wouldn't want to give anybody the wrong information about that, or traditional Chinese medicine. Both of those are rich traditions that have many
Very
wonderful
rich.
Remedies. I am not an expert on it.
This is one that I'm doing a little work on as well. Very, very effective. Helping with both diabetes and blood sugar as well. A lot of articles in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition on it. So I think it's an up and rising star. Going to make the crossover to the traditional side.
I can't wait. What is it?
It's called Salicea.
Ah.
And I think you're going to probably see a little bit more of the information coming out. It is an Ayurvedic treatment for obesity and diabetes.
Interesting.
Very, very interesting. And I think we're going to see. Yeah, I think you're going to see more and more of it. Like mulberry, these are things that are, and cinnamon, of course, as well. And you
cinnamon
know.
Too. It has a checkered reputation. There was some wonderful studies at the USDA. Richard Anderson, who, by the way, the same guy who invented chromium, basically, did a lot of studies on cinnamon. And some of them were very promising, some of them not so much, but I certainly think that there's enough there and enough absence of any downside to including cinnamon as much as possible. I think that's true, actually, with almost every spice that you can mention. Ginger, cinnamon, cloves. I've done a number of articles on these things, and they all have, you start to delve into the research on ginger. Who even knew? I thought ginger was just good for upset stomachs. There's so much anti-cancer research on ginger going on right now. And, a lot of these herbs, cinnamon being one of them, they really do have lots of different effects in the body systemically. And I don't even think we know all the good things these guys do. So I definitely think adding cinnamon, it's really an every little bit helps philosophy. Any one of these things by itself will not defeat diabetes, but a lifestyle that includes as much of them as possible, as frequently as possible, is very likely to cut risks.
You mentioned a topic that I like to talk a lot about, which of course is inflammation. And I usually describe inflammation as kind of like the accelerator of your car. The higher the inflammation in the body, the systemic, the C-reactive protein, the harder you're pushing the accelerator to the floor, and it actually will cause an intensifying of any kind of a health problem you have, whether it's skin or digestive or elimination or any of the cardiovascular metabolic syndrome health problems.
And as we
reduce that inflammatory level, your foot comes back on the accelerator and, the body is able to start to deal with some of these out of balance problems. And the one thing that I have added to the regime only because of the abundancy of information is turmeric. And I've been adding that in as well.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up. Turmeric, of course, is the spice that gives Indian food its yellow look, and it's found in all the curries. And the extract from turmeric, turmeric has a lot of different properties. It has many different oils and different things in it besides curcumin. But the lion's share of attention as far as turmeric goes is the bioactive compounds in it called curcumin. And because turmeric, even though it's the greatest spice in the world, I gave it a star in my book, The 150 Healthiest Foods on Earth, it's just the stuff isn't well absorbed, and for those who really want to get the benefit of curcumin, it's almost mandatory that you take it as a supplement. And that doesn't mean I don't think you should sprinkle turmeric on as many foods as you can possibly put it on. It's a great spice. I use it all the time. But I do think to get the really the firepower of those bioactive compounds, you're best off with a supplement. My favorite one, for what it's worth, is Terry Naturally. They sell that everywhere at Vitamin Shop and GNC and everywhere else you can think of. And I just like that's their kind of flagship product, their curcumin. They always get the best sources, and they test it very well, and it's well absorbed. And so I think curcumin as a supplement, CuraMed, any one of the Terry Naturally products, I think is very, very important, not only to reduce inflammation, but curcumin actually works on a lot of different metabolic pathways. It's very, very healing for the liver. It's anti-inflammatory, as we talked about. It's just generally a great, great supplement to add.
We are always perpetually works in progress. And, as long as, we've been around and we've learned and, tripped and stumbled and jumped over speed bumps and ran into mountains in this field, I'm always interested in new information. And there's nothing better than having a new way of looking at something that we've looked at one way for a long time and we thought it was the only way. And all of a sudden a new door opens that makes everything better and more absorbable. And, that's probably why you're living low carb book is in its fourth edition. Things change.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. You know, and I'm gonna go off the reservation here and actually say something that most people don't hear me say a lot, and that's about prescription meds. Mm-hmm. Always looking for, you know, great ways to get the same thing done without any of the potential side effects, and I'm always a big proponent of using natural medicines for that. That said, there happens to be one prescription medicine that they use for diabetes, which is so terrific that I put myself on it, and I don't have diabetes, and I don't have high blood sugar, and I don't have any of the risk factors for it, and I take it because there's a little side effect. Side effect is it lowers the risk of cancer. And in fact, this drug is now being researched by the NIH as an anti-aging drug. It does. I don't think a week goes by that I don't read a study on this drug, which was really intended only to bring blood sugar down for diabetics, and it turns out to have all of these ancillary benefits that nobody even knew about. And the drug is called metformin, and I am a big fan of it.
Well, you know, the radiated benefits that come from other things, it's kind of like when you take a nutritional supplement for one thing and you get two other benefits that you weren't planning on. Boy, that's a good day.
It's a good day, and I'll tell you something, it's much more frequent than people realize. How many people know what Viagra was originally researched for? I think many people may have forgotten it was a blood pressure medicine, and they didn't want to give it back in the study. And they said, why don't you want to give this stuff back? And they found out, it's got a little bit of a side effect that people seem to like. And that is the story of how Viagra came into being. I'll give you another example from the natural products field, collagen.
Oh, yeah.
I've been a collagen taker since 1998, a big fan of collagen. I always thought, I take it for the skin. It makes me look good, and everybody tells me how youthful I look for my age and all that stuff, and I'm, you know, a big fan of collagen supplements. Well, I'm taking a look at the latest issue of Men's Journal. I read all the popular magazines because I like to see what, you know, the people who write to me, what they're reading and what they're hearing and from the media. And there was this wonderful article on this anti-aging clinic where they kind of do a biological age for various systems in your body, a neuro system, the cardiovascular system, the pulmonary system. And what they found was that collagen is a great marker for pulmonary health.
I saw that article.
You saw that article? Okay, yeah. So look. So now we've taken this collagen stuff that we think, oh, it's great. It's going to make me look. It's a vanity product. So wait a minute. It has implications for joint health. It has implications for cartilage health. It has implications for pulmonary health. Who knew? Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's three types of collagen, type 1 and 3. And they go together, and type 2, which is more for the joints. I take this stuff every day. Again, big fan of the stuff that they sell at GNC, ResVital brand. You can get it anywhere at GNC, and they have it at other stores under the ResVital brand. Great little collagen products, and I was taking them mainly thinking, no, this is kind of like the beauty product. I don't really, you know, that's what it's for. But now I've actually moved collagen into my top 10 list for regular, normal, healthy people who really want the best supplementation program, because we realize now that collagen is the most abundant protein in the body, and it has enormous implications for just about every aspect of human health. You know, if your tissues start to break down and your skin starts to break down and your cartilage starts to break down and your joints start to ache, you know, that's aging. And I think collagen is a great protective against that. And I mention it because we're constantly finding this about these spices, like you mentioned, cinnamon or ginger or, you know, all these things that turn out to have multiple values. And that's something you almost never see with drugs, very rarely.
One quick question for you. As a nation,
yeah,
are we going to get it together with blood sugar?
Honestly, Jeff, I am not optimistic.
Yeah, me neither.
I'm not optimistic. We are running an uphill battle against enormous marketing forces, both pro-GMO, which I think have profound effects on gut health, both for, you know, these high sugar foods that the manufacturers are trying to convince us are healthy. I think it's an uphill battle. It takes a very special person. And when I do these shows, and when you do them, I'm going to venture a guess that you feel the same way I do. I'm not trying to hit all of America. I don't think that everybody's going to listen to us. What we're trying to do is save the one or two people who go, holy moly, those guys are making sense. And, you know, Malcolm X used to say this. He used to say, I'll talk to an auditorium of 5,000 people, and if I connect with one or two of them who get what I'm saying, that's a good day. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how I feel. I don't know that we're going to be able to put into place policies that actually change the way America eats. Because, you really can't legislate this stuff. What you've got pleasure merchants out here selling foods that taste good, feel good, make people happy, and make them absolutely sick. And everybody looks at the sickness. That's way down the road. But right now, I've got this Krispy Kreme, and it tastes great, and I'm joyfully, you know, celebrating with friends, and of course I'm going to have this. And unfortunately, that's a hard thing to change. So I'm not terribly optimistic about the health of America, but I'm very optimistic about the people who listen to us getting that kind of information and making a personal change in their own lives. I think that we can continue to reach people like that all the time.
Today we talked about a lot of things that we can use to help us in our journey to be healthy in the area of diabetes and a healthy pancreas and a healthy body. We discussed weight and fat distribution, inactivity, of course, family history. We talked about great supplementations that are now available, supplementation products, individual nutrients that you might not have even known can give you a great balance, things like bitter melon and chromium and things like mulberry leaf. We talked about cinnamon. You know, there's niacin, there's salicylic, there's wonderful products, omega-3 fatty acids, great products available. But it does come down to us making the choice to do things in a healthier way. Johnny brought great information out, and for more information on his wonderful things, some of the books that he has done, they're unbelievable. You can always go to johnnyboden.com for his webpage. His new book, Smart Fat, Eat More Fat, Lose More Weight, Get Healthy Now, by Stephen Masley and Johnny Boden, amazing book for your library. Don't forget about his fourth edition of Living Low Carb. A blog you might want to check out, thebloodsugardiet.com, and the website of the week, diabetessisters.org. Just some good information. I hope you'll take the time to do some information for yourself. Check out your family history and also keep a little journal of some of the things you're doing. You may find that you may be spoon and fork feeding some of these cardiovascular situations right into your own lifestyle. I'm Dr. Jeffrey Burke. This is the Talk Healthy Today show on Radio MD. For more information on this and all of the segments, visit the show page on Radio MD. Look for Talk Healthy Today. I thank you for listening and stay well.